This is episode number 68 with Anthony Trucks. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. Thank you guys so much for spending part of your day with me today. I know you are going to be super happy that you did when you hear the incredible story of my guest, Anthony Trucks, rising up from an intensely difficult childhood. And when you hear all the deep wisdom that he has to share of how he's taken full responsibility to create his own destiny and how he helps others in doing the same. Now, before we hop into today's episode, I wanted to make sure that y'all know about my badass online course called Believe, which is a step-by-step process showing you how to partner with your subconscious mind through self-hypnosis so that you can change your own beliefs on a subconscious level to attract exactly what it is that you want with greater ease. So if you've been struggling to get or to have certain things that you want in your life, whether that's to make more money, to have that loving and trusting romantic relationship, to get to your ideal weight or health, or to just feel happy and at peace with yourself. You know, the only thing that's standing in your way are the beliefs that you currently have that aren't aligned with what you want. That's really it. That's the only thing that's causing the struggle or having you feel like you cannot achieve the things that you desire. The moment you align your beliefs about who you are, whether that's being lovable or enough, or you believe that you are worthy or deserving of what you want and that it's safe for you to have it, that is when you finally can have it. So in my Believe online course, I show you how to get out of your own way by programming new and empowering beliefs at a subconscious level that align with what you want so that you can easily be, do, and have everything that you want. Now, I go deep into the exact steps that I use to practice self-hypnosis. It's been a game changer for my life. And this is also what I teach my private clients to build a new future that looks and feels exactly how they want. I show you how to put yourself into hypnosis. I also share a lot of different change work practices that you can use while you're in trance to create the inner change at a subconscious level. And of course, I add in a whole lot more. Now, I'm always giving away a lot of the secrets that I use with my private clients that you can use for yourself. It works. And I'm always getting messages from people who have gone through the course freaking out about all the incredible things that they're manifesting into their life because they've upgraded their beliefs to match what they want to receive. So you guys, it's game time to finally have what you want. 2020 is your year. I feel it. And you can absolutely make this the most epic year filled with everything that you want, feeling exactly how you want to feel. So if you're ready and you want that support, you can go to stephaniekwong.com/believe to learn more and to get yourself into the awesome and powerful practice of self-hypnosis to build a new future for yourself that includes everything that you want. Now, I'll also link that up in the show notes page for you. All right. So I'm super stoked for you guys to hear today's guest, the crazy inspiring Anthony Trucks. Anthony is a serial entrepreneur with one serious superpower, the power to know his identity and navigate life's shifts, good and bad, with grace and optimism to make success your second nature. He created Identity Shift, which is a company focused on helping people to close the identity gaps that are responsible for their shortfall in potential and lack of success. And he helps people to find out who they truly are and develop into who they want to be. Anthony is a former NFL athlete, a former gym owner, international speaker. He's an author, a shift coach, and he was on NBC's American Ninja Warrior, where he became the first former NFL athlete to hit a buzzer. Now, Anthony is a force of light, and you can feel how committed he is to helping others to be empowered to achieve their greatest dreams and goals and to reach their highest potential. Now, when I first met Anthony, he spoke at our friend's event, and that's when I heard all the details of what he experienced as a child. And it really hurt my heart when I heard all that he had to go through. He was given away at 3 years old into the foster care system and experienced an extreme amount of horrific abuse that no child should ever have to experience. He endured beatings, starvation, and different forms of torture all before the age of 6. And it then turned into 8 more years in foster care before being adopted into a poor all-white family as the only Black person. And in all the years following, he had had so many other crazy shifts in his life, like trying to find his way in high school through sports, becoming a teen parent, marrying his high school sweetheart, finding his biological father at 21, losing his first self-defining career in the NFL to an injury, having twins at 25 in an unstable marriage, coming close to suicide at age 28, getting a divorce, fully changing careers to try a new venture, losing his adopted mother and father, remarrying his ex-wife, and more. I mean, you guys, it feels like Anthony's lived 29 lives and more. I mean, a lot of things that Anthony's gone through, most don't get through. But as you'll hear today, Anthony didn't let his past define him. He took things into his own hands through grit and hard work, and he defied the odds, and he created his own destiny. He dug in deep to heal and to create powerful identity shifts that brought him from former foster child to pro athlete to one of the most highly regarded speakers and trainers in his industry. And through all of these internal shifts, Anthony has accessed an endless supply of happiness and inner peace, and he's built an incredible level of success. Now, you guys can turn things around in your life if you just believe that you can. If you do the work to reprogram new beliefs and a new identity of who you are truly meant to be, you can absolutely achieve your greatest goals and dreams. And you know, we don't always have a choice to the homes that we're born into or how we're raised, but we always have the opportunity to rewrite our future. And I know that you guys are going to love this episode with Anthony as we dive deep into his struggles of growing up, his successes, his failures, and how he ultimately has been so successful in his life when all the odds were stacked against him. Now, this is an episode you definitely want to share, so go ahead and do that now. Take a screenshot of the podcast that you're listening to, share it out on the socials, because sharing is caring. And if you share this episode on the gram, make sure you tag me at I am Stephanie Kwong so that I know that you're tuning in. All right, you guys, let's dive in right now with Anthony. We got Anthony Trucks in the house. What is up, Anthony?
Nothing. I'm great. It's a beautiful Thursday day. I wouldn't say, it's not only called morning, it's not nighttime, it's like the day. So I'm having a great day, man. No complaints.
Well, I'm so grateful that our paths have crossed. So excited to have you on the show and grateful as well. I know when we met, you were speaking at our friend's event in their house, and I was so moved and touched and inspired by your story that I was like, I got to get this guy on the show. So I know you get hit up a lot. So the fact that you said yes, I was like, yes. Anthony, all my peeps get to hear from Anthony, and I know that this is just going to be an incredible episode. I've got a ton of questions for you.
I'd like
to go deeper with, but I'd like to start with this. So you've been quoted to say that the last person you should ever meet on your deathbed is the person you could have been.
Mm-hmm. You want me to expand on that?
Yes, and who do you want to meet on your deathbed?
Oh, I want to meet amazing Anthony. I think we all have this desire. It literally is like, I want to fulfill my true potential and do everything I'm capable of doing. And I don't think I know what that is. I don't think anybody really can sit back and say, I know exactly what that is. But I do know every level that I've reached, there's always been some new opportunity I never could perceive or even think about in advance. And so for me, it's like, when I talk about that, it's like, I never want to get to a point in my life where at the back end, I'm looking at myself in the mirror thinking, you could have done more. And I'm sure there will always be something. Don't get me wrong. It's like, it's a trail that never ends. Mm-hmm. I get that. But I want to look back and say, well, I never did speak out about this, you know, injustice. I never did, take ownership of this gift, or I never, did waste this thing. Like, those are kind of the big pieces, what it can turn into. Who knows? But yeah, man, the last person I want to meet, the person that I could have been, which is going back and having like a chance to even look at somebody else and say, God, I was on the same trajectory as them, but I got off too early. Look at what they're doing. And so I want to be able to, when I get to the end of my life and help other people, when they get to the end of their life, look back and say, damn, I lived this really cool, like unexpectedly awesome life.
I love that. I forgot where I heard this, but have you heard the saying that the place that lies the most potential is in a graveyard?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think Prince Ia says that. The richest place in the world is the graveyard. Yeah. A lot of dreams go to die. Ooh. Unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, let's journey back to your childhood, because when you shared that story of where you came from to where you are now, I was brought to tears hearing what you had to go through, but then so obviously inspired by how you rose up from the circumstances you were born into. But I'd love for you to share a bit about your childhood.
Yeah. It's a long bit of the childhood, but I'll give you the Reader's Digest so people can get a chance to feel it and understand it, so we can definitely get the things that help them from the story. Because I think that's, for me, it's always important to realize it was my experience, but somebody's story. Mm-hmm. So my experience creates benefit, but only if I'm able to actually talk and teach from it. So when I was 3 years old, I was given away into foster care. I was put into a system that at the time wasn't good for kids like me. It was this place where there's no social media. There's nothing to track anybody's being good or being bad. And I was what's called a paycheck. Paycheck means, as long as I don't die, they get paid for me. And there was a lot of places they just didn't take care of me, didn't feed me, didn't clothe me right, beat me, starved me, torture, weird stuff, like a lot of things. This is at 3 years old. From 3 to 6, I bounced around between 5 different houses, ended up in the house that's my family now at 6 years old. It was a better family, but really, really poor, only Black person in all white family. So I had a lot of weird identity stuff and navigating who I am. And I've always done that, from the foster kid who has this mom that doesn't love him. Who am I? Where do I fit? These people don't take care of me. Why is that? Why don't I deserve love? This family that, I'm with now, like, great, poor, but first dad was a drunk, used to beat my mom, just a bad dude. And, as life got better, I would kind of have to go through these motions, which is really weird ones. But imagine being scared of things getting better because they could be ripped away. That was my experience. So my mom divorced that guy. She remarried. Life got better. For 11 years, I was in the foster care system, 8 years at that home. And I didn't have, at any point in time until I was 14, this knowing that the house that I woke up in, I'd go to sleep in. No stability. There's no, because of the foster care system, they can literally pull up, put you in a car, take you somewhere else. So at 14, I finally had this chance of like, all right, I'm going to go. And, I'm assessing my mom's rights. I got to stand in front of a judge, look at my mom and my real mom and say, I don't want you to be my mother anymore. Severed parental rights, I can get adopted. So now I'm this adopted kid in an all-white family, former foster kid and just weird stuff. And then my older brother goes off to the military, leaves me and my other 5 siblings behind. He was like a big rock at the child base. My mom gets diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and I'm the son of a sick kid, a sick mom. I tried football for the first time because, I wanted to have a sense of self-worth I'd never had before. And football gave it to me. But then I also was gifted with this thing that is not a gift, but it's something that became a gift, which was I was exposed to something that I really wanted to do. The reflection of what took place was I sucked at it. Like, I wasn't good. And a lot of us try this. We try these things. We're like, hey, I'm gonna go in forward, just do path and do this thing. And then you get in front of you like, oh, but I suck and it hurts. And so what I do is I don't like hurt. I'm not going to keep putting myself in a position to get hurt. So I remove myself from that dream. Because a dream comes with pain on the journey. So for me, like, I did do that. I stepped away. I was like, this just hurts too much to go out there and literally get hit and it physically hurts. And then the knowledge of like, man, I'm not good. And people look at me funny. I'm like, oh, it just sucks. And I'm not amazing like Timmy and John who've been in the game for 5 years already. So I tucked away, man. I just got to the point of like, I'm no longer going to do this. And I didn't know at the time. If you look at statistics, which is interesting, I made this excuse of, I'm not supposed to have a great life. I'm not supposed to be good at football. I'm a foster kid. Nothing good happens for us. I don't know any good foster kids. I don't know anybody that's done something great from this end of this upbringing, so to speak. And I found out later that if you look at statistics in America, any prison in America, 75% of the inmates are former foster kids. Wow. Like, that's filling the prison systems up. 51% of the homeless population, former foster kids. Like, 1% of us will ever graduate from college. So numerically, like, I'm not supposed to do well. And I chalked it up. And then I had another amazing gift. And this is one we all can get, but we don't all get it. 15 years old, Mr. Howell's English class, sitting in a class. I'm checked out. I've got a park over my head, sleeping, eating a bag of cereal. And two girls are sitting next to me in this little desk area that he had allowed as like a couch he had put to the side. And they're talking. And one girl says to the other girl a statement so simple, yet so powerful to me. And she says, well, the reason I'm so bad is because I'm in foster care. And it was like this bang. Like, and what it was I got to hear my excuse out loud, realize how stupid it sounded. Mm-hmm. Like, that was what I was going to lay back on and be like, yeah, that's why I'm a bad husband, bad dad, you criminal. Like, that's why. Because something happened to me that I really have no control over. And I was like, I don't like the way that sounds. Like, it's not going to be who I am. And so I had this thought of like, right, I gotta figure out how to get out of this path or whatever it was. And I was like, I'm just going to be great. I literally went home, looked myself in the mirror, my pupils was like, you're going to be great. This little 15-year-old weird kid looking in the mirror. Imagine that. And I'm going to be great. And I don't know what great is, but one of the things was like, I'm going to be great at football. This thing that I'd already given up on, I'm going to find a way to do these things. And I was like, what do I got to do to be great at this? That's going to be uncomfortable. And I had to put in a winning effort before I knew I'd be successful. And this year, man, it created the man you see now. And I've been through a lot of ups and downs too. And I'll share more of those, I'm sure, in time as we open up these stories. But at 15 years old, I had this this coming out, we'll call it. I came back the next year. I was an animal, like a damn animal. I was feisty. I was fierce. I was angry. And most people think, oh, it's because you hit some weights. Because I lifted weights, ate all the food, ran the routes, caught a football all this time. Like, I wanted to be better. And what it really was the fact that I had done the work in the dark that gave me this chip on my shoulder that you didn't have the right to beat me today. It was it. Like, I was defending the work I did through my actions. And I don't think enough people understand that that's how you get to the point of succeeding. It's because it's not that you won't quit. It's that you won't allow yourself to quit because it messes up and sullies up all the past efforts you've given. That's how you just stay the course, not because you're supposed to win, but like, no, you have to. And that would be a waste of time because we as human beings have this investment bias. I don't want to invest something and not get a return. So if I invest this time, damn it, my return's going to be me balling. It's just what's going to be.
That's right. Yep. Right?
So that's how I applied it. And so at 15, I had this coming out. And so what it was is I realized that what you create creates you, literally. If I create this stronger, faster body physically, it creates some more pride-filled human internally. It created Anthony, the proud, the strong, the confident with self-esteem. And that guy showed up and made plays, and I got it doubled up because everybody loves me. Look, this guy balling out, right? And so you have that become the flow. And so for people in the world trying to like figure out how do I become this person, you have to take an action that doesn't feel comfortable at all, like at all. But in taking this action, it creates this person over time because you stay the course. And eventually that investment bias won't allow you to not stand up and fight for yourself tooth and nail.
I love that so much. And I think it's the choosing, like making that decision first and foremost of you saying, I'm going to be great, right? And not saying that my past is going to determine what my future is going to look like. And I'm not going to let my excuses or have some decision of my past define who I'm going to be. And that's so powerful. I know you've got this incredible video sharing your story on your website. So anybody, if you want to dive even deeper into Anthony's story, like go check it out. But I know that you mentioned, you know, this feeling, and especially if I think a lot of people struggle with this feeling of feeling worthless or unlovable. They might not have been in the whole foster care system, but they've had life circumstances occur that have created this feeling inside. And it sounded like you started to gain your worth and feel lovable in a way through the sport. Is that true, or were there other ways that you started to really own that feeling for yourself within?
Yeah, and I don't think it happened through sport. It just happened. That was the vessel that it came through, right? Because there's the internal and external places that we garner that feeling, right? The external is like the world giving us praise. And some people get addicted to that. And that's why they have to have everybody see them in a nice new clothes and fresh car and new jewelry, right? So I'm creating this thing that's going to have the world say, oh, you're awesome. Oh, I feel awesome. I must be awesome. And then there's a part of it that like, no, I just am awesome, whether you believe it to be or not. Like, I know I'm dope. Super high levels like Kanye West. You couldn't tell him nothing, right? So, and it's because of the stuff he did. Like, he knows he did it. I'm dope. And there's a level where there's an in-between. So sports just happened to be my vessel. You could have had it happen in piano. Like, I think that people sometimes, unfortunately, look at the way the world sees their world and determine a level of self-worth. So, for example, people see football, and because the world sees the world great in the football world, like, it's got, you must be a greater human than someone who's a ballet artist or a pianist or a doctor or a mom, right? Hey, just because the world doesn't come and put a camera in your face doesn't mean you're not dope. Like, it just means the rest of the world hasn't caught on to your awesomeness. And so for me, I don't look at it and say, well, because I don't play football, I'm not good anymore. Like, no, I'm in a whole other world. A lot of people don't know who the hell I am. Billions of people don't. You know what I mean? And that's okay. But at the end of the day, like, I'm not basing how I feel on whether they put a camera in my face or want to follow me. I know the people I work with and how I show up in my marriage and how I show up as a father. Like, that stuff, I know I show up amazingly, and it gives me a self-worth for it. It's just the actions I put towards that thing. So sports didn't give it to me. Having a vessel to put it into is what eventually allowed it to come back to me.
Beautiful. And so, because I know that when there was a point in time when you stopped playing football, wasn't there kind of a bit of a identity crisis for you, because so much of who you thought you were was playing in the NFL. You were this, you know, you were crushing on the field, and I think you had a shoulder injury. Is that what stopped your career? Yeah.
I mean, I leave high school, I go to the college, and in college I have a kid at 20 years old. So now another part of my identity is I'm a college athlete with a baby. But I was more of a father that played college sports. I was more of a dad at heart. And then I found my real dad at 21. So I had like this new, like, now I'm a guy who has two dads, but they're not gay dads. They're just a stepdad and a real dad, you know, foster dad and a real dad. interesting. And then fast forward, I leave college with the NFL. So I was an NFL player. And then my whole life has been that. My self-worth rooted there. And like you said, boom, playing against the Philadelphia Eagles with the Pittsburgh Steelers, tear my shoulder. Season's done. Career's done. Who the hell is Anthony? And people think like, oh, well, that's, you know, I don't know what that's football. That's a big level dropping down. Military hasn't happened. What if you're a mom and your kids go off to college? Who are you without having to take them to practice down anymore? Like, you know, these things are real situations. Like, what if I sell my business and what do? I'm not the business owner anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot that people don't grasp. These are real emotional things that are happening on a deep level for everybody. And for me, I came home and I had to face the reality that who Anthony was, like, the strength of him to the core was now removed. Like, I didn't have a sense of like self-worth because of this thing that I had put so much time into is now gone from me, and nobody else could see me that way. And I had my self-worth attached to something that was the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. If you look at like an octopus in the arms, tentacles, we'll call it. A lot of people are on a tentacle edge, and their self-worth is on the edge of that tentacle. The money I have, the house I own, the career I have. And they're on the, so what happens if that tentacle gets cut off? Like, they float off with the tentacle. They lose a sense of self-worth. But if they can get to the point of like, no, you're the main octopus. And if you're great, it'll positively affect each arm you have, but only if you're solid here. So if an arm goes off, like, cool, the arm grows back, but you're still centered. You can over time get a better job again or have another relationship or get your money back, right? Get your health back. But a lot of people are on that arm and it disappears, and they disappear and they float into a bottom. Like, I did that. I was this guy rooted in my sports, rooted in like my sense of self-worth community-wise, my relationship, my marriage. And I ate this gym business and I opened it up. And I was, because I was trying to find myself again, I put everything into the gym. I needed to be the guy that was amazing in this gym again, cover the world. Everybody's going to see me. And it was the wrong thing to do because now I neglected the rest of the stuff. So 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. I'm at the gym. I'm not dad. I'm not husband. I'm in bad shape. The business is failing because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And I'm not a football player anymore. So I get to the point where now I found out my wife has an affair, relationship's shocked. Like, I'm just shut. I feel like I'm giving my kids a pass like I had. I feel like a horrible father. Football's been removed. It's not coming back to me. The business is failing and I'm out of shape. Like, everything that was Anthony was gone. All the tentacles got cut off. No matter what one I jumped to was gone. And so I was like, this is enough. Like, I had so much physical pain from the emotional that like, I wanted to stop. I drove off one night. Like I was looking for rat poison. Thankfully, never found it. Thankfully, GPS found me. I snapped out of it. I came home. And that's when I had this, like, I had to figure out what the hell do I do with my life? Like, rock bottom. Every part of my identity was ripped. And I had to rebuild Anthony from scratch. And it meant I had to go back to figure out, like, how did I create all these different parts in the first place? How do I make this person better? And that was kind of a journey to navigating my entire identity, rebuilding it, restructuring it, and now teaching how to do that.
I want to talk about identity, but I want to bring up something that was really powerful that you had shared, where your friend talked to you the next day or a couple of days after when he found out that you were planning on killing yourself. Because what did you say? You're like, tell my kids who their father was. And he said something to you that really impacted you. And I would love for you to share that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's a guy that I played high school football with, actually worked at the gym with me. And it was one of those things where, like, nobody at this time, like, most people don't talk men to men, like, about how they think about a guy. And so I didn't know this, but, like, I came back a couple of days later. I think I was, like, back to the gym, trying to get back to life again, because it was just, like, a crazy place I didn't want to get into. And, like, he pulled me in a back room. He's like, Aunt Man, I just want to have a conversation, let you know. He's like, whenever I found out what was going on, he's like, I physically threw up. He's like, actually threw up. I was like, man, I'm a bad. Like, he's like, no, you know why? He says, it's because what happened was whenever you drove off, I thought I'd lost a hero. I'm like, what do you mean by like a hero? I was like, I'm your buddy, bro. He's like, I'm just a guy that we just, you know, we play sports and work together. He's like, nah, yeah, I know that. He says, but most people in the community won't tell you. He says, everybody knows what you've gone through. Like, people know your past. People know what you've come through. They know what you aspired to, created. You played in the NFL. You came home. Like, everybody gives you. And you may not know it, but, like, you're affecting people's lives. It's like, yeah. So for me, like, one of the big catalysts was this thing where I had this thought that now got planted was, well, if I'm doing this by accident, like, what if I actually tried? What if I went and tried to make sense of all this crazy in my life, tried to pull these weird lessons I was put in front of? I think I'm a man of faith. I believe God put me in all these crazy situations because he knew I'd get out of them. He knew I had the heart and the ability to talk about it later and do this for the world. And so, yeah, that was the catalyst to me, like, thinking, man, maybe there's more. Maybe there's something else that can be done with all this craziness to make it more of an impactful thing that the world can learn from. So that's why I'm at this point a ridiculously open book about life. And I got a whole bunch of weird stories that most people would never know are part of my life, but it's all part of the process.
Totally.
Now.
I mean, you didn't even get into that many details of your childhood, but there were some really gnarly things that happened to you that you shared with, like, you being put into a shopping cart and being pushed down a hill, falling out of it to licking shoes.
Yeah. Bottom of shoes. Yeah. That's all before 6 years old. Had to chase chickens in a chicken coop to earn my meals for the night. And if I didn't earn, I had to, like, hoard food at, like, 2 a.m. It's weird.
Yeah.
A lot of weird stuff. That's like the root foundation of, like, a person's, you know, life. Like, that was the kind of stuff that typically happens to kids like me, unfortunately, and a lot don't climb out of. So, like, so for me to come out of just those situations, you know, take away the stuff with, you know, my marriage, take away the stuff with football. I mean, all that stuff, it still is a lot. And I don't say that to be like, I'm awesome. I say it to like my wife and I sit back. We're like, well, how did you get out of that? I'm like, I don't know. She's like, Aunt, how did you? I'm like, I don't know. Like, there's a lot I don't know. I just, I do know I try to make sense of it. I may not know the exact reason of how I did, but of what I can figure out, I pull out the lessons, the concepts and everything. So someone can hear the story, but then be like, yeah, well, okay, how do I get, you know, through my marriage issues? How do I figure out this business? How do I deal with lack of self-esteem, lack of self-worth? And so I go through and I take these stories and I put them together with, like, actual neuroscience I research, psychology I research, and, like, hey, this makes sense at a high level. How do I bring it down to, like, super simple so that Tim and Susan can get it? And then I put them through the actions of it. And then lo and behold, it's like, oh, that works. And so, yeah, I think legitimately, I believe all these crazy things that happened genuinely happened for a reason at this point.
And so, talking about identity, because I know that's something that you're really passionate about. You showed us a whole diagram of how identity is created and start how to shift that. But I would love for you to share about that, because to me, that is the key. Like, your identity literally generates the reality that you experience.
All day.
Go ahead and share about that, please.
You want to know
about it? Why don't you tell me, hey?
So the first thing you have to realize is, like, a life mastery loop, we call it. It's like these 7 operational stages we have. And so your identity is who, if I asked you, who are you right now? you tell me who you are, right? And it'd be things you'd anchor to. I'm a mom, I'm a coach, I'm an athlete, I'm a speaker. It's literally what people talk about. And then what ends up happening is you have this wheel you process around, and the way it goes is the next step from the identity you see yourself to be is a certain set of beliefs you have. I have beliefs about the world, about myself, beliefs. Those beliefs create these thoughts I have all day long. You know, things are possible, things are impossible, whatever it might be. It leads to feelings, the way I feel about myself, the way I feel about the world. And these feelings lead to our actions. If I'm mad, I'm kicking the door. If I'm happy, I'm giving you a hug. You know, so our actions lead to this. And this could be like, if I'm boldly, if I'm an entrepreneur, can I boldly sell this thing because it's going to change your life? Or do I like say, hey, you should try it maybe, like, you know, so that leads to the actions. The actions create the outcomes. Whether I make more money, don't make money, have, you know, success, don't have success, there's an outcome because of how good the action was. And then what ends up happening is that outcome creates the environment externally and internally. So if I have this beautiful, amazing house that I get to show up to every day and wake up and every morning, like I feel good about myself. I wake up in squalor, or I have, you know, horrible, like maybe I suck a little bit, I might think. Or internally, if I have a lack of self-esteem because my outcome sucked, like I suck, I'm not good. And that re-ingrains the identity you already have. And so if you look at this flow, people have it going all day, every day. It's literally your life mastery loop. And so what happens, I look at where can I change something that could change a little bit of who you are. And I'll talk about in a minute where the identity piece is in, but the area you change it is right in that space between feelings and actions. Because you can take a very unconfident action. People do all the time. Mm-hmm. The first time we do something, it's like, I don't know if I'm good, but here we go. And like, we just, you know, we take off and roll. It's like, oh my gosh, I could run that marathon. I could lift that weight. I did get her number. Oh, he did call me. You know, like these things that are real situations. I didn't know if I could do it, but I like to see what happens. But the loop spins differently. The outcome's different. I have this different environment I live in internally and externally. I have a different sense of who I am, beliefs, thoughts, feelings. Oh, let's keep going. And so for me, like that's what I want to have. That's the whole, what you create creates you, right? To create mm-hmm. something doesn't mean you create it with confidence to begin with. It means you start with no confidence. You create it and you're like, oh, wait, I can do this. And the confidence builds. And so the way I look at this whole thing is like, we're trying to create what I call an ideal identity. To where you, like the identity of who you are, that's, because there's a separation between who I am and what I have and the person who has the things that I want. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people are staying the person they are, trying to do the things that someone who's successful does, and it drains their soul all day, every day, because they're not that person. They're having to choose and decide to do it. And the way it works is like throughout life in psychology, you have a certain amount of decision like points, right? You can have a decision tank. And if you're deciding to do stuff after a while, you just don't want to decide anymore, right? Just don't
decision
feel like,
oh, fatigue. I don't want to think about it. You're like,
right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So if I'm sitting here trying to like, I know certain things will move the needle. So I want to try those things. What ends up happening is I'll do those things and I'm deciding, do I go to the gym? Do I write this email? Do I make that phone call? Do I have this conversation? It's really hard. And I'm deciding, do I do it? So by midday, like I'm smoked. I can't do it anymore. But if it's who you are, I'm not deciding to go to the gym. I go to the gym. I'm not deciding to make the call. I make those calls. That's just who I am. So by the time you get to midday, like you're still going, like, let's go, right? We get more done. And the problem is these separations are what I call an identity gap. And where this gap floats in is where a lot of people don't realize if I don't close this gap, I'm going to always be here trying to do this and eventually fall short, go back to my old ways. And so the ideal identity is how do I get over there, right? What does that look like? And you have what's called beliefs and thoughts and actions. And it's a Venn diagram, literally. And so at the top, you have beliefs. If one lobe is thoughts, one lobe's actions, we always hear about the mindset. You got to have a great mindset. Like the secret's all about mindset, what you think. And I was like, yeah, mindset's part of it. But if I sit here in my chair and say, I have a strong mindset, I should make $1 million tomorrow. Like it doesn't mean I'm going to make $1 million, you know? And so it's a piece of it, not all of it. And on top of that, people don't grasp where it fits. So what happens if I have these strong beliefs that I should be somebody amazing, but then my thoughts creep in and say, but should you? Can you? Are they going to buy that? You sure you're going to do that? What if they make fun of you? Now what happens, I have this gap of like, oh, I have a weak mindset. So I need to have a stronger mindset. I need to have the mindset of the person who's over here doing those things, right? Then you have where your actions and your thoughts overlap. If I think and tell myself, oh, I got to go to the gym tomorrow, and I don't, what happens, I'm out of commitment. My habits suck. And if I don't have a commitment to the process past the feelings, I'll never succeed. That's what we're talking about, right? I have this thing that I want to do. I try these things. There's no true commitment to it. So I always fall short. And this is where the big piece comes in, actions and beliefs. If I believe I'm supposed to do that thing, but my actions fall short of it. Like, I believe in order for me to get a promotion, I absolutely have to be at work on time, speak up in these meetings, be proactive and take action, take a stance, fight for myself. But then in the moments when I'm given the opportunity to do it, take the action, I don't, I fall out of this arrogant character and pride. I lose that chip on my shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I suck. Like, I'm not very good. And the wheel spins backwards. And so what happens when you have that character, that mindset, those commitments, along with the beliefs, thoughts, and actions, I got this ideal identity that just shows up and they have the Midas touch. It's like, why does Susan always win? How can she always be great at the, you know, like, why does this always work? How does Nick always get this stuff? It's these Midas touch people. And I was like, how do they operate? And that's how they operate. And the reason they operate and the reason they don't fatigue at certain points is because through doing these things, through having a strong mindset, having commitments, having this character that keeps building and building, they create this ideal identity. And think of the ideal identity like this pike, this spike in the middle of a road. It's pitch black outside. You can see this glowing yellow spike. And around this yellow spike is this floating red orb just spinning around it. This is weird, but picture this. And then what ends up happening is this pike, this yellow thing, that's your identity. And if this thing is strong, this glowing red orb is your ego, it'll protect that. Now, ego people call everyone's greatest obstacle, or I do. I think everyone's greatest obstacle, right? And we always hear how bad it is. But what about when the ego showed up for me to be a great football player and my ego said, no, I got to hit the weights. I got to eat. I got to show up to practice on time, right? What about, you know, Susan was like, no, I'm a great mom. If my kid needs a ride, I'm getting up and going. I'm going to get up at 5 a.m. and take my daughter to swim. Or the business owner was like, no, I'm a solid leader. I'm a great manager. I'm going to support my team, support my staff, go to bat for them. That becomes honestly easy because it's who I am. So the stronger my identity is, the more the ego will protect it with the actions. And now you get to that effortless effort. And now when it comes time for you to go and make a decision throughout the day, I don't decide if I do that. It's just who I am. In fact, if I don't do it, I lose a chip on my shoulder, like there's a little bit of pride loss. Like, not a couple of days ago, I had an email I was supposed to get. I totally dropped the ball. I missed it all day. 11 o'clock rolls around. I'm in bed. It pops in my head. I'm like, oh, I told him I'd get him to it today, right? I could have easily went to bed, got up the next day. I got out of my bed, went to my laptop, got the email out, then went back to bed because it was part of who I am. And it wasn't hard. In fact, it would be odd if I didn't do it. It's not nudging me to do it. It's just like, no, I have to. And so that's the people, like when you don't see the background of people who are successful, that's what's going on with them. They just do. They don't care if you're watching or not. They just do that. And the fact that you don't do it, it's like, but you said you want what I have and you're not willing to do that. Yeah, that's why. And so when people start looking at how do I become successful, it's you have to look at the ideal identity process and how you can create what will create you.
I love that so much. And what I'm hearing in the things that you shared, right, because I love the whole identity process, what I've identified is some of the key pieces that you must have in your identity in order to truly be successful, whatever you define it to be, is having commitment. You said it. Like, I'm committed AF. Like, just because it's 11 o'clock, because I said I was going to do it, I'm going to get out of bed and do it, which also shows integrity, right? Self-integrity and just integrity in your word. And then also responsibility. Like, I think if we really look at it a lot of time, because look, I have broken my word to myself many, many times, and that has me lose the chip on my shoulder. All of a sudden, I'm breaking, and like, it has me lose trust in myself. And then I start to doubt myself, like, can I even really do it? Because look, I'm not doing it.
You don't show up for yourself anymore. People don't get, that's really like, if you think about a person, think of anybody you can think of that you don't respect or love. You're gonna show up for them in the middle of the night to help them? No. Like, I don't like that person. I'm not gonna go do my efforts. But if you love like a sibling, a cousin, a brother, a spouse, like I'll go out of my way to help that person. Mm-hmm. And what we're not realizing is when you fall short of those actions, when you have a little bit of that chip because you didn't have the beliefs and actions line up, you didn't do that thing, well, now you lose respect and love for that person, which is you a little bit. And you lose it more and more. So now you don't show up for that person and you don't get the actions done and you can't create, never create you. And that's what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are like key things. Just even when I had to look at my life is like, am I committed? Am I being my word? And am I being responsible when there were breakdowns in my life? And I'm like, one of those are missing. Okay, great. Now I have to become the identity of the person who will show up in these ways, which is so powerful. So for you, what do you see your identity as that's had you achieve the success and continue? And like, what are the key ones that you would instill in other people so that they generate what it is that they want to do?
Yeah. One of the biggest parts for me is integrity. Huge. Beyond to the extent that if something questions my integrity, that's when my teeth come out. Like, I don't like it in any way. Because I've lived a life so clean that I, like, I've put everything out in the world in a book of the crazy parts of my life. I am an open book to any questions. So I think whenever I look at integrity, it's not just doing what's right. It has nothing to do with that completely for me. A part of it is do what's right, but part of it is do what you say you're going to do. And I mean, to the extent of if I tell you I'm going to send a text message to you or I'm going to call you back, I feel so horrible if I don't do it. Like, it eats me up. Like, damn, I told her I'd get a text to her. I didn't get a text. I said I'd respond to an email. I didn't. So I'm very, very big on not making promises I can't 100% keep. And I think those are some of the traits that if our society had that, you wouldn't have a reason to lie or fall short. Like, you wouldn't, but you, so I just, integrity's big in terms of, like, I'll do things for people just because I don't want to drop the ball for me. Like, I had this client recently. It was like, he had to finish a contract. I needed him to pay for his contract. And I'd done everything. It was all to the point, like, well, in the past, I've had people, you know, not get this stuff totally done. I still pay and it would disappear. And I was like, first off, you know, I'm not going to do that. Secondly, dude, I'm going to finish this for me. Just so you know, like, I'm not doing this just so you get it. I'm doing it so I can sleep amazing at night knowing I got this done. I don't have to question or I never have to run into you in public and have you look at me like, hey, you didn't get it done. Like, there's no one on this planet that can run into me in public right now and say you did me wrong. Nobody. Like, so I walk away free. I'm good. That's one human trait I think identity-wise people should have. And then I'm really big on finish what you start. Like, that, I don't start everything, but I finish everything I start. And I think a lot of people are wondering why they can't reach this end destination. I heard Bo Easton say this. He says, everything you want's already there for you. Everything you got, it's all yours. But the only thing that'll stop you is if you stop along the path. It's the only reason you won't get it is because you choose at some point to stop. So if you want it, just keep going. It's pretty much it. So I don't stop the process. And there's no deadline to it. I just don't stop. And eventually I'll get there. Because I think if you have a deadline, it's like, well, I didn't get there by this time. Find something new. Like, no, I put it in place. Let me go find it. And that's kind of how I operate. Other parts of, like, if people ask what my identity is, like, I'm a dad and a husband and a man of God first. Like, those are the things of who I am. And then I'm a coach. And at the end of the day, I'm like a big servant to society. Not like volunteer work. But I don't ever want to be the guy that says you should do this but doesn't do it. And so you'll never know me. And it's a lot of people I help out in this world, like passing, pay for their stuff at restaurants. Like, you'll never know who I am. Ever know who I am. Like, racking, they call it a random acts of kindness. I'm big on that. And I don't need you to social media see it. I don't need that. I just got to know that I'm doing my part to make the world what I want it to be, which is great.
That's when you know it's actually really truly coming from your heart. It's like you don't need the credit or the acknowledgement for it. It's genuinely just something that you feel called to serve. And it's truly the generosity and contribution. Because I know a lot of times when people are like, well, I give all the time. But then yet, all of a sudden they remember the things that they did for you and they'll throw it back in your face. And you're like, well, you weren't really given. Yeah. That was horse trading. Because you wouldn't have remembered what it is that you did if it was just truly from your heart. You just give to give and not give to get something back. So I really love that.
Yeah, I don't need it back. Yeah, it's operate. Because at the end of the day, some people have no place to give. They can't give. They're not supposed to give. They're supposed to see an example of how to do it and do it for somebody else. I may not get it for me, but if I do it for you, you're gonna feel a little bit of a guilt. People, you have to give to get. You have to give something, and someone will give something back. But it might not be to me, right? It might be something I gave to you, and it's totally cool. Like, I'm really big on, my wife doesn't get this about me. Like, when people do me wrong, I don't really stress off having to be the one that creates the vengeance or gets the get back or sees things happen. Or in a positive light, I don't have to be the one that sees what happens from it. I just have this really good faith in knowing, like, hey, they'll be taken care of. Like, that things will happen, right? Or if I do something great for somebody, I'm just in my head, I'm thinking, like, there's going to be a moment in time when they're in a good mood, someone's in a bad mood around them. They think about the feeling of, man, that felt real, you know, like, I did a real cool thing for me. I'm going to do that. And I'll never know about it. And that's totally cool. I just know it's happening. And maybe I do what I do knowing in my head it's probably happening. But maybe it's not. I don't know. I'm gonna err towards what makes me feel good. So in my head, it's like, yeah, I'm going to go do these things because then it creates that thing in the world that I think the news lacks to show.
So good. You talk a lot about living an unexpected life. So yeah. Doing things when people look years from now, they're like, he did what?
Always. As everybody has that. And I think part of it is for me. Yeah. Like I have this, I say unexpected life. The meaning of that is like a life when you look back on it, you're like, I never would have expected that to be my life. And there's a lot like Ninja Warrior, but an American Ninja Warrior TV show. I wasn't supposed to be on that show. I'm a 6'1", 230-pound, non-rock climbing, you know, former football playing dude. And most of the show, like 80% white men who are like 5'7", 150, who rock climb. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm not supposed to do that, but now I'm the first former NFL athlete to hit a buzzer on the show. That's something that like I can look back, like I never expected to be that, you know? And so at this point, when you asked early on, like, you know, being able to look back and be clear on like, I never want to meet the person I could have been. That's how I do that. I look at these things that intrigue me and I'm like, that'd be cool. And then I go do it. And I figure like, if I break it, I'll learn. Like, totally cool. Like, and if I don't, I got something cool I can figure out and tell people. Like at this point in my life, I'm a weird jack of random trades. My wife's opened a day program for adults with disabilities, like adult daycare. And I'm over there now, like installing the alarms. I'm going to build the website because I build my websites. I do the floors. I installed all the vinyl floors in there. I'll fix all the different little pieces of like machines and equipment that's in there. I can teach it right now how to do an entire like 1-year periodized program because my degree's in kinesiology. I can help you write a speech, build a business brand. Like I may not be the best in all of them, but I am very proficient in the ones I do choose. I can fix cars. I can install a car stereo in your car right now. TV screens, everything. You can think like everything. I'll mount TVs in your house. It's weird. And it's all because I'm like, what would happen if I tried that? So I go do it. And yes, I've broken a lot of things. But at the same time, I just keep trying it because I was like, I'm going to figure out how that works. And I just do. So I'm the guy everybody calls to get help on the most random odd things. Like, Aunt, do you know how to? Hell yes, I do.
How to deliver a baby? So, sure do. I got three.
I've researched it. I've researched how to deliver a baby if you're in the woods. So yes, I could probably do it. Like, yeah. Odd, right? It's I'm a big documentary guy. I love information. Now I haven't delivered a baby, but here's the thing. It's crazy. If you put me in the woods, I'm going to boldly step the hell up and be like, yeah, I could do this. even if I've never done it before, because if somebody needs to do it, the worst that I can do is go into it with the emotion of, I don't know if I can, because now I'm giving permission for me to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I don't want permission to make a mistake. I want to be able to do it and then own the mistake if it happens. But why fulfill a self-fulfilling prophecy? It's weird and odd. It doesn't mean, you know, hire me to deliver your baby. Not at all. But if we're in the woods and a baby comes, I'm going to have a smile on my face. Like, let's make sure this little thing doesn't die. Aww. And we're going to figure it out.
You'd be the guy that people would trust because especially even that confidence, like you said something too, that I really love. It's like, your job is to give it all you got and expect to win even when no one else does.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's mm-hmm. who you like embody yourself to be. You're like, all right, I'm going to give it all I got. Expect to win.
Yeah. And people think it may be foolhardy. Believe me, this, if I don't know how to do it, I've never put any time into it. Hell no, I'm not going to go in and do that thing. Don't get me wrong. Like there's things I'm like, I don't know. Right. And I'll step out of them. But the thing that triggers me is when I have it, I'm like, but why don't I, if another human being has figured that out, why can't I try to get some information on it? Mm. And so I'll go research a little bit. I'll research on Google. I'll read a book. Like I'll figure things out because it gives me some insight. But if I don't know, I'm not like a fool. I'm not going to go on there and be like, I'll help with the baby if I've never even looked at anything about how to deliver a baby in the woods. Like, that'd be stupid of me because then I'm going to kill your baby. But if I took some time, like, I'd be like, you know what? Does anybody else have any insight? Okay, well, I've done this one thing. I feel confident. We'll go. Like,
so have you watched any videos on the YouTube about heart surgery? Would you be the guy that – just kidding.
No, hell no. See?
Wouldn't touch that.
Nothing. Nothing. Because that's a whole different monster. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, like you're opening incisions, what are you going to close it with? I don't know where things go. I've done cadavers. I've worked with cadavers because my degree's in that area, but I'm not doing heart surgery. That's a whole other monster. That's one of those things like, yeah, hell no. But a baby coming out, they used to do it back in the day. Cavemen were doing it, damn it, in the woods. Why can't I do it now?
Okay, so whoever's in the woods having a baby, call Anthony. He'll be right there helping you out.
Come get me.
I know that... You know, you were close with your adoptive mother and she passed of MS, and it's something that you spoke about as being a particularly hard time in your life.
Yeah.
Can you share about her and also how you move through kind of the grief of letting her go?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, I didn't have as much grief. I think that, I don't know how to explain this. So I've always looked at it like this. My mom passed 2014, April 15, 2014. I was in the room when she passed away. And like, it was tough because like, you look at this woman who gave a lot like of her heart to me. I was a bad little kid. She loved me through the crazy. Like, she was the one that softened the hard heart. Like, it wasn't a, you know, really open and embracing kid. But she wasn't like, you wouldn't look at her and think she's anything, but we were poor. She, you know, just, you know, finished schooling at like, you know, at her 40s. Like, she like didn't graduate from the high school, had her first kid when she was 14. You wouldn't look at her and think that she was, you know, somebody that was gonna be great at all. But she was so great at how she loved. Mm. And so that was her gift to the world. And then when she passed, like, part of me was like, we knew 17 years, we knew it was coming. We just didn't know when. So like, we were always kind of gearing for it. And I think for me, I was able to prepare for it more emotionally just because I realized what's going on. It still was abrasive when it happens. It just is. But like, I had this thought of like, well, she's finally out of pain. And like, knowing who she was before she got sick, like, this wasn't her. Like, she was always in pain, always, I couldn't, you know, couldn't go to sleep at times. It was very difficult. So like, okay, she's finally at peace in her soul. And separately, I was like, man, there's a lot that she did that created me, like, unconditionally loved me. Because statistically, I'm not supposed to do great. You want to know what was the change? It was like, she was the catalyst to it. Her, my wife, was a big piece of it. Other people I've had as coaches and mentors, but she was the one catalyst to begin the whole process of like me being a non-statistic. And it was this unconditional love to a human that wasn't her blood that she could have easily given back to the system, but didn't. And so for me, I was like, man, like, when I had that thought back before, and I was like, my buddy's like, hey, you know, like, I could do something accidentally, like, I could do it on purpose. Like, it was 2 years after that she passed. And I was like, man, maybe I gotta realize, like, I don't have time to be floating around thinking about what I'm gonna do. She's 47.
Wow.
And so she passed like at such an early age. And I was like, man, at the age I am now, there's a possibility that I will be here for less years than I've already been here. And it feels like it's been so fast already. And I was like, I got to do something. So I literally went to the realm of like sifting through this world that we're in now, personal development, where do I fit? Can I fit? And going through this process of like redesigning like my life, my identity, like, who am I? How do I, everything. I closed an entire gym, all this stuff. Cause my mom gave me this thought of like, if I look at what she did, how can I have her message go on? It was like, let me unconditionally love the world the way she did. Let me go out and like do cool things. Like, you, who you see me to be and how I think and talk now, I'm just trying to love on people, man. Like, that's really and I have a weird pedestal to do it because people see this, you know, bigger black former NFL guy. So I can get the alpha crowd of the guys, like handlebar mustache dudes. And I'll talk to them, like have a conversation, but then I'll go in a room of women. And like, God didn't make me an ugly man. I'm not saying I like, I'm so beautiful, but like, I know I'm not an ugly dude. And so I don't know what it is, but it allows me to have a conversation. But at the same capacity, I'm talking to their mind and their heart. He has been a phenomenal relationship. So I don't mess up that conversation by entering with like, you know, weird romantic, you know, awkwardly sexual conversation. I can really talk to women and not have them think I'm trying to get in their pants.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just trying to help because I have this cool thing. And then it gave me my marriage back. Like, my marriage is an amazing, incredible marriage now. I would go through what I went through twice to get where it's at now. Like, it's just, it's different. It's a whole other conversation. But I have these things and I have them in capacity in my life currently so I can give back to the world in a unique way because there's a lot of weird tangents I can talk about. And so it's kind of like she was a big catalyst to that. She was always the one in the background that was, you know, kind of there being the human being that was like a beacon of how I should live my life and create something
that's
special.
Beautiful. And I think so often we feel like the way to give is we have to have these things or be at a certain place in order to give back. And really the salve and all we need really is that love and unconditionally, as you said, versus any sort of conditional love. And that's truly what anybody needs. And that's priceless. I know that there was a turn that happened with your marriage when you found out that your wife, because you guys split up and you got back together, which I think is so cool.
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah, it's an odd. It's one of those things, man. It's one of those weird parts of my story. I didn't do it for this industry. Like, I didn't do it so I could say, like, it just happened and just happens to be very beneficial to people's lives, oddly.
How did you
know what you want to hear about?
Well, yeah, like, highlights are what? Like, how did you guys, what happened? Because
So we did the, we got to the point where we just forgot why we were together. We also were curious of who each other was. I was not around. And the reality was, it took a lot of time and growth for Anthony to realize that although she made a crappy decision, she didn't get to a place of feeling like she needed to make a decision by herself. Mm-hmm. So like I had to own like, damn it. Like I was at the gym 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. trying to build this thing and it ruined it. She wasn't trying to hurt me. She was trying to fulfill her own needs and it happened to hurt me. Weird way to look at it. I don't condone the action to this day, but it is what it is. Then we went our separate ways and custody battles. I had a girlfriend live with me. She lived with her boyfriend back and forth, pick up, drop off. Oddly, at one point in time, one of like her ex-boyfriends, I shot in the leg because he came to my house all drunk. Weird. Yeah. Super weird, man. let's just say very volatile, very volatile. Fast forward 3 years. And I don't know what it was. I think part of it was like, whenever somebody has shame, they can't forgive somebody. And it's like telling somebody, I want you to be better. But the way it comes out is you suck. I hate you because you were hurt. So you want to hurt. And so I want her to be a better mom because she was taking it hard. She was partying, drinking, all kind of crazy. Had no sense of faith. Like it was just tough. And got to the point where I was like, man, I'm not helping this situation. I just keep shaming her because I wanted her to feel the pain I felt. And then I realized like I had a part to play. I could also have some empathy for the place. She must've been in a really dark place to feel like she had to do that and hide. It wasn't all exciting. A lot of it was like, man, I'm so empty. I need something. I need this thing that my husband's not giving me, right? There's part of an empathy there. And so when I realized that, I was like, you know, I'm not helping her be a better mom for my kids. It wasn't even for me at first. I didn't want her back. And what ended up happening was like, I took the board off the plant. Like, you know, if you're trying to have this plant grow, you can't have a board on it and keep stomping on it. So I took the board off. So I wouldn't condemn her. I wouldn't shame her anymore. She'd get emotional with things. I just wouldn't go there. Like we would go to those conversations. You did this. That's why you, and like, it just didn't serve us anymore. So I was like, I just started saying like, okay. Like, so she stopped having that weight of feeling the shame I keep throwing on her. And I think it gave her an opportunity to feel free to do her own work. She did her own work, a lot of it. And then, you know, eventually in this moment where like she kind of realized like the space we were in environmentally, physically in our town was a bad space. I was still like growing myself. And she's like, hey, I want to get out of here. I want to take the kids out of here for like a good 3 weeks, but I can't do it because of our organization of the you know, drop off, pickup. And I know you don't want to be away from the kids for 3 weeks. I'm like, I'm not going to wait with my kids for 3 weeks. It's like, well, let's go to Costa Rica. I hear it's safe. We'll take the kids. You'll have a room. I'll have a room. We'll stay completely apart. Like, just we'll be able to do our thing. You can work on your computer and do my, like, all right, go to Costa Rica. And it was the best way to explain it was I got to meet somebody for the first time I'd known for like 18 years. You know what I mean? Like, it was like this whole different human. And it was cool. Like it was, just, it was, and we didn't even get back together then. Like I still had girls I was talking to. I had like one or two girls I kind of knew with each other, but like I wasn't in a relationship. I was just kind of floaty. I was trying to hold it apart for Anthony. It's not my character to be that guy, but like when you're lonely, you do guy things. And so it wasn't like, we weren't trying to get back together. And I got home. I was actually about to go on a date. The day before the date, she's like, I want to get back together. Like threw me for a loop. Like, what are you doing? She's like, well, you know, I've been praying on this. She found faith, which is great. She's been praying on this. She's like, I don't want to be somewhere I regret later on not telling you.
Wow.
I was like, all right. So she tells me, ruins the date, thankfully. You know? And I came home and that was a catalyst to us like talking about what it would look like, what it would be like. And the biggest thing was like, we do not want our previous marriage because the previous marriage was broken. So what can we build new? Can we build something new?
And what were kind of the main things that have built a stronger, more powerful foundation for the two of you?
A lack of like swallowing of pride, giving appreciation and giving when you don't want to. And the communication is big. So I think one of the big things is there's this desire for control. I want you to do this thing. And this thing just benefits me. Do this thing so it benefits me. And when you're trying to control something, you have the least amount of control, especially when it comes to another person. If a person knows what you want, and you give, there's a desire for reciprocity and it comes from a place that you want. And then they give you the thing you want and it's the same thing. Oh, I feel good. I want to reciprocate this. And so it goes in a positive circle. So things that I would like, don't do that. Don't go like, I was like, whatever, do what you want. Like do your thing. And people always ask like, how do you trust in that situation? Cause she did it before. And I was like, well, trust is an emotion. It comes off a feeling. And like when I have my like things she would do before, the little alarm would go off in my head and I try to quiet it down. And now I just didn't. But I never have the alarm go off because I'm giving her things she wants, which means she's giving me what I want. There's no part of the conversation, communication that needs to be like, we used to like before, like tell me where you're going, send me a text when you're there. And she purposely wouldn't because why would she give me anything? I'm not giving what she wants, you know? But now it's like normal. It just, I don't ask her to tell me. She just lets me know. Like, it's just how we, it's a weird trusting relationship flow. Communication's big. I can control myself enough to realize that there's moments when I want to say something, but right now isn't the moment. And so I'll take it into a stride. And then when there's a space and time, because of how she operates, she can't, in the moment of heated emotion, when emotion's high, intelligence is low for everybody. For her, her emotion goes up high for a long time. And I love her to death, but I'm like, it's going to be up there for a while. At this point, I'm like, it's going to be there for a while. No logic here. But when she comes down, we can have the conversation. I don't attack it. I just like, hey, let's talk about this. So what's going on? I'm not mad. I love you to death. I get who you are and how it happens. She'll be like, yeah, you're right. But I'm not going to get that when she's here. And if I keep fighting for it here, it just goes up there, you know? And so like communication is big, and understanding, and then seceding the ego. There are times when I want something and it's too much for me and it's not thinking of her. And then when most people are faced with that, we rebut it. We make justifications, we make excuses. And so I'm big on not making excuses. Like if it messed up, I'll be like, yeah, you're right. Cause what's it going to hurt to lose your pride for the person you love, right? At the end of the day, it's what you want. I think Fabulous says, it's okay to lose your pride over someone you love, but don't lose someone you love over your pride. Ooh,
yes.
Yeah, it's not mine, but it's good.
It's good. I'll say I heard it from you. There you go. That's so good. I love the fact that how you shared that, you could tell you're in true embodiment of it because it's like who you be. And that's super powerful. I think there's like a mutual, again, love, respect, and honor of the other human and really giving to them.
Very much.
Again, that unconditional love, letting her do her storm in her emotion, not taking it personally and getting hooked into it, letting the storm pass, and then having the conversation is really beautiful.
She's a different human. I mean, you have to be okay with a different human though. Like that's people don't, like nobody operates at your tick. And the best way to get what you want is to give them what they want, what they need. So like she knows what I want and need. It's already in her head. It's a matter of what's going to make her desire to give it to me, not be forced to give it to
me.
And what will make her desire to give it to me is if I give it to her. So I just give it to her. And I don't do it by counting and like, hey, I did this. You should do this. I just do it. And then once you get the wheel spinning fast enough, it's just you're always in that space of consistently, you know, reciprocating the giving. It's just a natural flow. And then it's just like every day, it's like, man, life is really good. And the thing is just like the identity portion, at first it's difficult, but now it's just who I am. So now it just happens effortlessly and the world just spins differently for me. And life is good. I make good money. I make a good impact in the world. I have a really good heart. I'm an amazing father, I believe. I give time to my wife, like I give. And so I get all the things I've been seeking. Mm,
that's so good. And yeah, going back to the identity piece, it's like you kept creating this relationship that then created you, like the results that you have inside of it, which is really beautiful. Last thing that I'd love you to drop in about because it's so powerful, trust your hustle.
Yeah. You want to know about it right now? Yeah. So Trust Your Hustle was my original brand. And this is perfect for the concept of how it shifts. So when I first got out, I had this thought and a statement out of some weird, I say out of the gym industry, it probably helps. I was like, I had this meeting I had and I was like, man, someone's like, how do you just do these things? And I'm like, I don't know. I trust that I'm gonna be there. Like when I need something, I was like, you know, because one girl, she's like, I have the business plan, the money. I just can't pull the trigger. I'm like, you have to trust like that at some point the problem's going to happen, but you got to bring you to the problem. You really just got to like, trust your hustle. Everybody's like, oh, that's good. I was like, it is good, isn't it? And so I built a brand around Trust Your Hustle, which really what it is, it's trust in the fact that you've built enough sense of confidence and just wealth of knowledge that yes, a problem is going to happen. Like it's just natural. Something's going to go wrong because you didn't plan. Anything that doesn't happen according to plan is wrong, right? Even if it's good, it's like, that's wrong because now I got this new success to deal with. Like what I do with all this money, it's happened. I've made more money than I knew what to do with to an extent towards like the government's going to take it all. Like how do I solve this problem? You know what I mean? So like there's certain ways you look at it. And for me, I've always realized that if you can trust that you bring you to the problems later on, I'll gladly go down that path. If I don't trust that, I'll avoid it. I'll keep myself small. I'll self-sabotage. So Trust Your Hustle is really about trusting yourself to move forward in that stance.
So good. So good. Anthony, what's something unique about you that most people don't know?
I like country music.
What?
I have no idea. I have no idea who sings this song. I couldn't tell you names, but when I'm in my car, country music and like electronic music is all I listen. Because country music, you can listen to it and you don't feel bad. I listen to rap music. I'm gonna kill your hoe. I'm gonna snatch a bee. And like, I don't want you taking my girlfriend and killing my dogs. Like, come on, bro. You feel bad. So now, like, for me, I like the country music. I got a good little twang to it. I feel good in the car. I don't even know what they're saying half the time. I once said, I guess there's a song, a guy goes, body like a back road. I thought he said back door. So I'm singing body like a back door. My kid's like, what are you saying? It's like, I don't know. So I just listen to it. And then I like electronic music. Not so much like, I like Odessa. I don't like the stuff that's like techno. I like the stuff that's kind of, it's just sounds that are like mellowing and calming and like they have a little tempo to it, but have no words. It's like my version of less classical music. Cause like my brain's moving, but it's not classical music, which feels super old to me. It's very good classical music, but I haven't really leaned into it. But the electronic, man, I could have it on in the background just for hours. But yeah, that's my weirdness.
I love it.
I was about to say,
I'm like, I bet we could go down another rabbit hole.
We can. I don't buy expensive shoes. The most I'll spend on shoes is like 30, 40 bucks. I have Nike shoes. I don't know why. I got a pair of Jordans I've never worn. I'm saving for my kids. I don't even know why I bought the damn things. I legit like to wear Chucks. I got 8-year-old Chucks. I'll rock those way more than anything else. What else is weird? I don't know, man. I got a lot of weird stuff I do that I don't think the public needs to know about. I don't do any drugs or anything. I'm legit. I've never had a cup of coffee. I drink tea. I'm a tea guy. Chai lattes. I like that pumpkin spice, like a white girl. You know what I'm saying? I like it. No, I'm just kidding. No, I do actually love pumpkin spice. It's not lattes. I can't do coffee, but I'll do a pumpkin chai.
You're probably happy right now because it's pumpkin chai season.
Oh, it's already been out. Pizza year round. I didn't know that. My new favorite place. Ooh. They got a bacon cheddar brioche. Fire. What? It's fire. What? They just came with eggnog today too. They got chai nogs at Starbucks. I got my little red cup. Killing it.
Chai nog.
You know what it is? At the end of the day, here's the truth. I'm a regular, everyday dude. Like I may be different from if you line me up with a bunch of guys that look like me, I'd be the one that if you talk to me, I'm like way different. By the end of the day, I'm a regular guy. I just have a super irregular desire to give back to this world. It's a weird marriage. So like I live in normalcy because all my kids have a normal childhood. But when I go to show up, man, I show up for the world.
Yeah, you do. 100%. What do you do to take care of your mental and emotional well-being? Are there some
Some
rituals or some consistent things that you do for yourself to make sure that you're in the mental and emotional game?
Yeah, so I have I keep myself around people that have no clue what I do, therefore don't give me prideful, praise all the time. I think it's always good. I get that in social, it's great. Like you feel good at events. But I go home, my wife makes sure I take the dog crap out and I fix the fences and I, get up hella early, take my daughter to swim, regular dude. So I keep my best friend in the world doesn't care what I do at all. Like he loves me for what I do. But he's like, I don't care what he thinks what I do is stupid. You know what I mean? It's kind of interesting, but it's a phenomenal relationship. So I think the thing that gives me mental space is like when I'm spending time away from work, I'm not spending time in work. I'm away. And so I get to recharge, so to speak. And then I go to the gym, I work out. And I don't spend mental energy in negative places. So a lot of people have these weird things happen to them that are not what they planned. And we spend 95% of our time thinking about it, stewing on it, getting mad, watching TV, eating chocolate ice cream. Right? I'm in that place. And I'm like, well, I think the quality of this moment determines the quality of the next, right? How I handle this moment determines the next one. And I've had enough of those negative moments. I don't want to mess that next moment up. So what do I got to do now to control my emotions, my logic, my perspective of what's going on now, to not have it be something that messes the rest of it up. And so I flip it on its head. I spend, 95% of my time taking an action in opposition of how I feel. Because actions like your physiology changes your psychology, even not just the neuroscience, my brain moving makes me feel better. So meditation is a small part of it. A lot of it's movement. It's a lot of it's being around good people. Also, I think when you have a lack of joy, you can't just summon it. I believe you can, in fact, borrow it. So if you go and are around other people have a big joy tank right now, go hang with them because they're going to be in a space because they can give you what they have. If you're around other people that are negative, they can give you what they have. And I don't want that. So I need to be around people that are joyous for whatever hell reason they're joyous. I don't care if it's like my kid just scored a goal in soccer and he's 6 years old. Let's hear about the damn goal, bro. What happened? I want to have this so I can come out of it. And now I'm, for a lot of people, that joy center, because I just have a perspective of happy and joy because of what I know I could be living in. But that's the thing. I spend 95% of my time on action to get out of holes, so I don't have to spend my time stewing about the problem. Because at the end of the day, the one thing I really do, this is a weird one, but go with me because I'm a weird guy sometimes. I picture myself sitting on a cloud. Think about how I have clouds. Like when you're in the clouds level with the planes, you're up at the level, you look down, it's just little ants. Have you ever looked at an anthill and wondered what the problems they have are? And did somebody, you know, not bring the ant poop? So no, it's just like, to the bigger picture of it all, it's there. That little ant problem is nothing. So I'm like, my little problem I have right now that I'm mad about, if I remove myself and sit in the cloud, it doesn't matter. So find a way to get out of this. Don't let this thing affect the next moments of your life.
So good. Preach, Anthony, preach. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
10-year-old self, hey, man, it's not your fault. 10-year-old, I thought a lot of it was my fault. I was unlovable. I was, you know, the one causing problems. And it was all like, you're a bad dude, Aunt. But 10 years old, man, it's not your fault. That's really it. It's not, I think anything's, not everything's our fault. It's about responsibility, right? I got to work on it if it did happen, but it's not my fault. Like, I didn't have anything to do with what was taking place because my mom couldn't handle it. And the sad part is, and it helped me get a lot of forgiveness, was most people, like 99% of people, are not trying to maliciously hurt you. They're doing the best that they can. It just sucks that it happens to be something that negatively affects your life. So for me, it's like knowing, hey, it wasn't my fault, my responsibility to work on it, which I did. But going back to that guy, I would have got out of the hole quicker, would have allowed my mom to have to give less energy to break me out of my shell if I stopped blaming myself for being so bad and not worthy of love.
Beautiful. Look, Anthony, I know there's a lot of incredible things that you're doing. Is there anything in particular that you're working on or that you're excited about that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, man. One of the things, so I think in the world of what I do, a lot of people get up and talk about this stuff and they give a lot of ideas and concepts of what should be done. But then somebody goes away from this and like, okay, what do I do? And I never wanted to be a person that leaves people, well, what do I do? And so I literally, before this podcast, spent 3 hours with my content team. And so what's amazing, I've finally taken all the stuff I'm talking about and then have actual structural processes to work people through to make this all become a reality. And so I use what's called a shift schematic, see, shift, sustain. So I don't just talk about this. I take people through these actual things in my programs. And so what I'm always excited about is the ability to change a person's life by teaching them how to change their own. It's really what it boils down to. And so for me, the things, if someone wants to find out more about this, so they want to be able to like take a look, like maybe I can make an identity shift, just go to anthonytrucks.com. You can also go to sloworgo.co. It's a quiz you can take to see if you have a slow identity or a go identity, which leads you into a path where you can possibly work with us if it feels like it's a fit. But yeah, I'm always excited about that. Cause that's where, I mean, this stuff is fun. I love it, but I spend so much time behind the same screen talking to people, working them through those things. And it's so cool to like hear the conversations of a man in a relationship where I finally got a breakthrough in my business because I was able to do this thing that I've been overwhelmed with for so long because I found a way to make it just who I am to do that thing. So it's easy and now it moves the needle and I have that Midas touch, right? That's the stuff that's beautiful to me because that's, I think in our world today, that's the separation. Everybody has tools. Everyone has techniques and strategies, all of them. But you can't seem to get the success that so-and-so has using the same ones and why. And it's like, you're just not the identity that happens yet. When you put that piece in, it's gangbusters. Because think about a strategy or a tool. Somebody was like, I have a problem. I'm going to figure out. I'm of the identity to figure out. They figured it out because it's who they are. They came back and told it to you. So what if you're a person that happens to be a person that creates the strategies now, creates the tools now? Not only can you use the one somebody gives you much easier, but now you make your own. That's a magical space to be.
I love it. So going to your website, is there any other places that people can connect with you?
Instagram, baby, you know what I'm saying? The IG, at Anthony Trucks. My son is at something else, Anthony Trucks, but I'm the only one that I know of in the world. So at Anthony Trucks, besides my son.
Beautiful. Anthony, thank you so much for sharing your passion, your heart, your soul, your energy, and all your incredible stories and wisdom. You are amazing, and I'm so grateful that our paths crossed.
Thank you.
That Anthony is freaking amazing. I'm telling you guys, he's truly a force of light. I'm sure you felt it in the interview, and it feels so empowering to be in his presence because Anthony only interacts with you from your greatness. and we all have it in us. We all have greatness. It's just a matter of tapping into the parts of ourselves that are aligned with who we truly want to be and who we really are. And to connect with the parts of ourselves, like being confident, courageous, bold, or powerful, that when we are embodying them, and again, it's already within us, but when you tap in and embody them, it allows us to take the aligned actions to go after what we want so that we can actualize our goals and dreams. It is all possible. And when you have solid beliefs driving you that support all that you desire instead of blocking it, that is how it manifests with ease. And it's not that you're not capable. It's not that what happened in your past is going to be what continues in your future. You guys all heard that today in the interview, that all it takes is an intention and a willingness to dive deep into your soul and to rewrite your story, to shift your identity and your beliefs. And you need to get the identity programmed into you. And if programmed correctly, you can have the output that you want and to create success on autopilot. So, guys, I'm reminding you, if you haven't checked out my online course, Believe, make sure you go do that at stephaniekwong.com/believe. It's time to partner with your mind to program the beliefs that you need to support you in having and achieving all that you want. So again, whether that's attracting more money, a loving romantic relationship, or your dream job, or you want to get to your ideal weight, to heal your body, or to just feel more happy and at peace within yourself, it's time to upgrade and to align your beliefs with what you want so that you can have it all with greater ease. So for more details about the course and to get yourself in there to start manifesting all that you want, again, go to stephaniekwong.com/believe. Okay, to close this out, if there's someone that you know who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you want to connect with Anthony and to learn more about the incredible identity shift work that he does, all the links are in the show notes. And that is over at stephaniekwong.com/EP69. And you can check out all of my other podcast episodes there too. All right. Until next time, I'm sending you a whole lot of love.